Hello?
Hi.
Did you just call me from the kitchen? Why?
I just couldn't think of an opening gag, and I just haven't been really feeling it lately, so I thought, might as well phone it in.
Seriously? Hi, I'm Jaina.
And I'm Sharon.
And together, we're Jasses Begancy,
where one does research and the other has opinions. Oh, we also bring you from Antsy to Gansy.
Wait, I don't have opinions? You do research?
You do research, and I only have opinions.
Do I have opinions too? Am I allowed to have opinions?
I guess you're I'll allow it.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Fair enough. Mm-hmm.
And today,
we are talking about our three leftover games from last week's episode.
Leftovers. Now, these are probably leftovers that are better overnight.
I think so.
Of several nights.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because we're saving the last. Best. Last for the best. Best for the last.
Yes, that one.
That one.
And so these three games were kind of three of the more standout games from last month. Mm-hmm. And that is Iki, Dominant Species Marine, and The Great Split.
Mm.
Now, you've only played one of these three.
That's true.
Mm-hmm.
I've only played Dominant Species Marine.
So we'll sandwich that one in the middle.
Yeah. So I'll definitely have opinions on that. And the rest, I will, still have opinions, even if I haven't played yet. I'll ask questions and I'll form my prejudiced opinions from that.
Excellent. I like it. All right. Should we just jump right in?
Sure.
Okay. So up first is Iki, which is by Kuda Yamada and published by a whole bunch of different publishers. But the one that was listed up top was Itsuroi. I don't know. Here, you can say it. That's a U.
U-T-S-U. U-T-S-U-R-O-I.
Mm-hmm.
Itsuroi?
Okay. Anyways, sorry, we butchered that. So, Iki, you are playing as, I believe, I can't remember if you're a Japanese family or if you're merchants. So basically,
I thought you were playing as Edo era Japanese artisans.
Oh, maybe.
Artisans.
Yeah. And you're putting out shops.
Mm-hmm.
You're purchasing helpers. You want to basically progress in your skills in each of those shops so you can retire.
Oh, okay.
And then I guess you're just reincarnated back and you have to do it all over again with the new shop.
Oh, wow.
And
that's capitalism for you.
I know, right? And you're also kind of worker placement. You're moving around the board. You're visiting other people's shops, your own shops.
Why are you visiting other people's shops?
Well, so you need to collect resources because, of course, you have to pay your people.
Oh.
You have to feed your people.
Ugh.
You want to get money so you can hire more people.
Mm.
And also collecting some other resources. You may want to build a building. You know, a nice permanent structure so people can remember you.
What do you start off with? You're just selling stuff off the street?
So,
like a random street urchin?
So, in Iki, there is a big central board that's split into, I can't remember how many quadrants, quite a few. And each area can hold four different shops. And each of those areas that holds four different shops is kind of split into two. So when you're moving your main figure around the board, you're moving from one spot that holds two shops, then you can take another step to the next spot that holds two shops, etc. Whenever you stop, this is kind of like the first part of your action. Whenever you stop, each area gives you a benefit. You can take that benefit. And then you can also choose one of the two shops, if there are shops in both spots, to basically purchase from or get goods from.
Hmm.
And basically turn order is kind of a little tricky because how you're determining turn order is whichever your spot is, whether you're one, first, second, third, or fourth in turn order, that's going to dictate how many steps you're taking on your next turn. So which shops you're going to end up at. And whenever you visit someone else's shop, their shopkeeper gains experience and gets to bump up. So that little bit closer to retirement.
Okay.
And at the start of each turn, you have the option to buy a shop and put it out, There's set collections as well. So when you buy a shop, when you get to retire it, it comes back to your player boards. You're still getting benefits from it. You want to collect all like different kinds of shops for endgame scoring. There's scoring on the board itself. So you want to make sure that where you put your shop, there's in that same area of four shops, there's other shops of the same color to try and get some scoring in the middle of the game. Then there's also fire.
Of course there is.
Of course there is. So at three times during the course of the game, and you know when it's coming, it's at a set round every time, a fire is going to rip through one of these alleyways. There's four different alleyways. And
may I just interject and ask, is there a fire station anywhere in the game?
Well, kind of, actually, now that you mention it.
Well, I'm just like, you know, if you're expecting, if everyone is expecting this fire,
yeah.
I sure hope that someone does something.
So what you can do, one of the spots you can stop,
right,
and shops are associated with increasing your fire bending ability, your fire rating.
Oh, wow.
You're more flame retardant.
Look at that crossover. Okay. Oh, so it just stops you from burning, and does it actually put out the fires?
It's a random. There's four different shop areas, and it's basically a completely 1 in 4 chance of what section is going to burn. Their shops, the fire always starts at the outside of the board and will move its way in. And there are shops where you can increase your fire repellent. And so if you build closer to where the fire starts, it's cheaper. And if you get your fire rating up high enough, A, you're saving some money, and B, as soon as the fire gets to someone's shop and their fire rating is high enough, the fire just stops. They put it out. Everyone behind them is safe.
Oh.
So it's really expensive to build towards the center of the board because you're more likely, you know, the fire is going to burn through a bunch of other people before it gets to you.
Right.
So you can maybe keep your fire rating a little lower. You're spending extra money on your spots, but that's kind of one less thing you need to worry about.
Okay, that's fair.
So, you know, it seems like this deep hero, and then there's fire. And it was really nice. I quite enjoyed it. It's not like there's anything that jumps out as super different from a bunch of heroes.
Okay.
But somehow it all comes together and feels very different. It's quite interactive.
I don't know if it's because it's, you know, themed, you know, in older Japan. I was going to say Japanese.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's a Japanese e-game, but it kind of, to me, sounds a little bit like Yokohama, right? Like you're a business person. You're moving around to different places to get the resources you need. And the set collection pieces, you fulfill those contracts and orders to get certain sets and technology. So what's the difference between that old classic Yokohama and Ikki, aside from the, you know, immediate storyline?
Okay. I never thought of it that way, but yeah, you're not wrong.
Okay.
So Ikki doesn't have that, like in Yokohama, it's your route planning is big. Like you have to be planning. You need to be putting down your workers so your president can move through them. People can really get in your way and block you.
Okay.
This game is interactive, but not in the same way. It's not blocky per se. Like maybe someone's going to get the shop you wanted or something like that. Okay. But it's looking at, I mean, there's shared incentives and you want to try and cluster a bunch of buildings that are the same colors together. Inevitably, you're also going to want to go to someone else's building and use it because you get benefits for cheap. It's much, much more beneficial than just the printed things on the board in that section. So normally you're going to want to do that. But, you know, you may want to look and see who's winning, who's losing, where are people at, as to, you know, try and figure out where you're going to want to go. Because you're also freeing up other people's workers as you do that, as their workers progress, and giving them better benefits during kind of the scoring and income phase. I'd say the spatial element is not so important. The turn mechanism is kind of a big deal too, like being able to pick first as to whether you want to go first, you know, whether you want to take that just that one step, two steps, three steps, or four steps. And of course, if you're taking four steps, you're moving farther, but you're going last in turn order. And that can matter too. So it does actually, now that you mention that, it shares a it definitely shares some similarities, but like you can't block anyone on the board. Everyone can go to the same spots. That's fine. But
then is it a friendlier game compared to Yokohama, or it's mean in different ways?
Yeah. I didn't think it was particularly mean. It's more about shared incentives and hoping that you weren't going to lose your market because of the fire. Like, you can kind of try and hide behind other people. It didn't feel mean, but it still felt interactive, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think it does. I mean, the art is kind of cute in its own era, in the way of, yeah. Stylistically, it looks kind of cute, especially the little meeples. I don't know if pictures I'm seeing are deluxified editions, probably, right?
Yeah, some of them definitely are different versions.
Yeah. But some of that art is very reflective of that era, very 2D looking.
That is not the art that we had.
Oh, no?
I don't think so.
Okay, so there's different
versions. There's different versions, I think, out there. Yeah, this looks much older. Oh, I'm guessing like we were playing with the 2015 edition.
Because I was going to say, these pictures reminded me of when I was a little girl and I went to a local Japanese restaurant.
Oh.
They were just kind of, it looks kind of dated. Even the patterns look a little dated. But that's probably because it's an older version of the game, potentially.
Yeah, I think there must be multiple. Because I know, so this one actually is just got nominated for...
The Kinderspiel?
Yes, that is the one. Which is interesting because it came out in 2015, but I believe it just came out in Germany or Europe this year. Oh, plus, there is a new expansion that came out.
So where did it come out first?
I don't know.
Huh.
I guess maybe Japan? China? Asia?
Well, I mean, if it's the Edo era, it would be Japan, right?
Yeah, but I don't know where it was released first.
Okay.
But yeah, it was a really nice game. I want to play it again. I've contemplated it. I've almost bought this a few times.
Japan.
Okay. Came out in Japan. Excellent. But yeah, no, it was really nice. I would definitely play this again. I think you would quite enjoy it. It feels like the kind of game that you would enjoy.
Are there contracts?
There's buildings that require certain things, but definitely not as many contracts as there are in Yokohama. Not really contracts in the same sense. Well, so, then. I mean, that is one markdown.
Yeah. Then what's the point?
Having fun with your friends?
Oh, right. That.
No. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting. Okay. So if we were practiced professional podcasters, you would now ask me, so Jaina, how excited are you to play this game again?
So Jaina, how excited would you to play this game again?
Thank you for asking. Mm-hmm. I'm so glad you asked that.
Yes, I just thought of this question because I am a professional podcaster.
Excellent. Did you know that all you need to do to be a professional, or to say you're a professional podcaster, is just to say you're a professional podcaster?
Yeah, I just have to be like them.
Yeah. Okay, so how excited am I? So we have a scale from 1 to 5. Where 1 on the scale is if someone asked me to play this game, I would actually decline or just not show up to that game group if I knew it was getting played. 3 is like, yeah, okay. I'm not chomping at the bit to play it again, but I would. I might even ask for it down the road. Mm-hmm. And 5 is stop the podcast. We're going to play it right now. Mm-hmm. This one is, for me, I think a 3.5 to a 4.
Okay.
I do want to go back and explore it, and I do want to try it with you. I do think you would enjoy it.
Where's the butt?
I don't know. I think it doesn't do anything new, per se. Like, sure, there's set collection, and you go about it in a slightly different way, but that didn't necessarily feel all that exciting. Yeah, you got to bump up your fire rating, okay. Just like in every other Euro where you have to, you know, bump up a track or, you know, go up the Emperor's track in Gugong so you don't, you know, you have a chance to win the game. Mm-hmm. And you're going around kind of this rondelle type thing. Yeah, okay, we've seen that before. And yeah, don't get me wrong, I enjoyed it. I would happily play it again. But it just, I don't know. It didn't do anything that really grabbed me and made me feel that it was unique and super, super special.
It feels like I want to say it feels dated in the sense that all of the mechanisms that are there, you know, it's sort of been there, done that. But I mean, I think to its credit, it's also actually a much older game.
It is a little,
than how it's portrayed being nominated at the Spiel. So
maybe
that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. My biggest question really is how, you know, the feel between this particular game and Yokohama, because I loved Yokohama.
It's really hard because we played Yokohama a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And when we first played it, we hadn't played as many games.
That's true.
Like, it was a couple of years ago.
That's very fair.
So I don't think it's a fair comparison. This is not as thinky as Yokohama.
Oh. Okay.
You are not going to be straining your brain. You can't get, I think, as screwed. Like in Yokohama, you can really have just a wasteful turn if you misplan or plan poorly. Whereas in this one, I don't think that would happen. You can obviously not play as well, but I don't think you'd just, you know, completely mess everything up.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay. That was icky.
That was icky.
Next game is Dominant Species Marine, which is by Chad Jensen and published by GMT, who normally publishes very heavy, legit war games.
Oh, well, that's a little different flavor for them.
Mm-hmm. So, I guess I'll start by explaining it.
Yeah, I mean, you're the one that does the research, right? Yeah.
Okay.
I'll have opinions.
Dominant Species Marine is, I guess, a spin-off from the original Dominant Species. And in both games, you are playing as shockingly, a species. And you want your species, basically, to go forth and prosper better than everyone else's.
Mm-hmm.
So, Dominant Species Marine only plays two to four players. And you are all ocean-going species, kind of. There's reptiles in there. It's a little confusing, but we're going to go with it. And it is a fairly standard worker placement game. There is a huge, basically half one side of the board is just a bunch of different actions you can take. And they're going to change a little bit from game to game because there are some random setup elements there. And when you want to take an action, you take one of your action markers, place it down over there, take that action. The catch is that when your next turn comes around, you can't place your next action marker higher than the previous one or to the left of the same in the same action as that previous marker. So you always have to plan that you can't go back, basically. So you want to be planning out kind of probably a few actions at a time, figure out, okay, I'm going to do this and I can do this and I can do this. Because if you end up being like, oh shoot, I really need to go back and do that action. Well, you have to spend a turn pulling all of your action markers back and starting again, which in this game could be very painful. And you know, what are you doing with these actions? You're basically, you start out on this little map of the ocean. Everyone starts in the coral reef and you want to spread your species out to all the different ocean types.
Well, there's different, there's like seagrass, there's the ocean, there are land, there's
like kelp forests,
sand, all of these different terrains.
Terrain, that's excellent. So you want to be spreading out to all these different ocean terrains, and the different terrain types are all worth different point values in basically an area majority type competition. Some of them, like land, are, you know, really high value. If you have the most species out there when a scoring is triggered, you're going to get, you know, 8 points.
Yeah.
Whereas some of them,
like the ocean,
it's only 2 points.
Mm-hmm.
So you're trying to balance that. You can also, this game is pretty bitey, quite literally. There's lots of cards come up that can interact with other players.
Your species can eat other species.
Species. You can die if you lose. Often, most of the time in this game, if you lose species off the board, they're gone forever.
Yeah.
You're not getting them back. You can't place them back out again.
If the food type that your species enjoys goes suddenly poof from the terrain that your species is inhabiting, at certain conditions, then your species also dies.
You're in danger. So basically the timing track and how all these are triggered is a series of cards that come out on the left side of the board. And, you know, one of the actions that you can commonly take is to take, draft one of those cards and play its action. And they can give you pretty powerful abilities. And then, you know, the remaining ones slide down and you flip up a new one. And often when you flip up a new card, that's going to have, you know, a little dead fish icon. And then you have to check and make sure that everyone can feed their species that are on the map. Or it might be a live fish icon. And I don't remember what that triggers. But it triggers something. And that's also your timer on the game, because somewhere in the last few cards is shuffled in the asteroid card. Mm-hmm. So you're basically playing kind of from, you know, the beginning of these species all the way through until that big asteroid hit.
And this is why we no longer have land fishes and land squids, which really were predominantly inhabiting all the land tiles in our game. That's the only reason.
Land fish and land squids. Because of that
giant meteor.
They haven't found fossils yet, but they are there.
They're there. And if they haven't found fossils yet, it's because the scientists are wrong. Because we know that, you know, predominantly the world was filled with land fishes and land squids.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's okay. My PSA.
So, guess what? It's your turn to shine. You have thoughts, opinions on dominant species marine.
I do. Mm-hmm. I think I like that it's bitey. It really sort of resembles, I guess, when you are a relatively young species trying to survive. The game itself requires a lot of, I guess, pre-planning and metagaming in that there are certain spots that I think a lot of people would want at a given turn, and you have to decide whether you want to start at the lower part of the board, which means you're giving up the opportunity to then go back and access the higher upper part of the board, because it becomes unavailable once you've placed something lower than it. So there is a little bit of the metagaming, figuring out, oh, do I take the risk of putting this in a higher up action, knowing that the action that I really, really wanted to take is somewhere down below, as well as some maybe bitier things that you could do is I'm choosing to take out the one food that my opponent species relies on, or I choose to have my species eat and disseminate some of the populations for my opponent in order to vie for control of particularly expensive tiles like land terrains. There's also a really smart things you can do with the wild action tokens.
Yeah, so if you basically can take a dominance action, and if it's a little weird and complicated, it has to do with like the type of food your species wants to eat and how many spaces you're in adjacent to it on the board. But basically, if you take that dominance action and you have a better dominance than was previously there for that food type, you get to take that. It's like a little white action marker, and it becomes yours until someone potentially takes it from you. And that gives you basically an extra action that can go anywhere.
And it's particularly powerful because that lets you boot out your opponent and access some spots that would have been unavailable to you if an opponent were to take that action in that spot. Depending on the particular action you're taking, it might give you extra bonuses or extra actions as well. So those things can be really powerful as well. And the decision to collect enough land tiles where your species are there, and collecting enough specific types of things that your species eat in order to get that special token, that's also a part of the equation, because it also comes in handy if you still own that extra action token at the end of the game, because it also gives you some level of game end scoring as well. So I think this game is true. It feels like it's sort of true to what the theme is. It is a good thinky puzzle. It is good for people that don't mind pissing each other off and find joy in doing that, which we do. Overall, I think it's a really good game. I enjoyed it.
Yeah. So I think my main takeaway when I went into it, like, I knew that it was a shorter, you know, more tighter, maybe slightly slimmed down version of the original Dominant Species, which we haven't played, but I had heard, you know, from other podcasts and people that have played it, that was just a very long, really painful experience, because it has that similar action mechanism. Except in that game, you don't take the action right away. You're just programming, placing out your markers. Then it resolves kind of top to bottom. So someone can mess up your plan and you literally can't do anything about it because you've already programmed that action.
That'd be tough.
And it plays up to 6 people. So I've heard that that one can just be really long and brain burning. So I went into this ready to have my brain explode and to, you know, be there all afternoon.
It really wasn't that at all.
No.
It was much shorter than I expected.
It was way shorter than I expected. I would like to think that I had this nice long-term plan strategy figured out and I was going to win if the game had gone on another 7, 8, 10, 20 more rounds.
Yeah. If only I had 50 more rounds, I would have
That was not true. It was way faster, way tighter, and way easier to learn than I expected.
I do think it's a bit of a race and a bit of a balance between getting a lot of in-game scoring as fast as you can and setting up for your end-game scoring. Because
yes.
our friend got quite close with a runaway game, or we thought
he was so far ahead we all just piled on him at the beginning,
and then the game end scores started coming in. Mm-hmm. And we got creeped closer and closer and closer. I mean, he still ended up, I think, winning. So I think it's really a finely tuned balance, and you have to really be smart about where you pick your battles, because here's the thing, the land terrains are going to be hot commodity and hotly mm-hmm. sought after. Mm-hmm. So if you conveniently create, and that's one of our friends who won the game, mm-hmm. Created an environment where it was far away from the hotly contested spots, made sure that those spots only had foods that his species would eat, and he got to reap a lot of the points in game.
Yeah, well, and he went deep ocean, mm-hmm. which isn't necessarily worth that many points, and we didn't really worry about it.
No,
he was just spreading far and wide in the deep ocean. He had no competition, and by the time we realized that things changed and we're like, oh, this could be a problem, it was too late. No one could get down there because no one else could eat the food. And it was, the game just ended way too quickly for us to do anything about it.
I towards the middle end of the game, did go there and it did spoil some of his plans. So those spots are easy to take over, but is it worth it? And so I think my lesson from that particular game, because I'm sure a different game would play very differently, mm-hmm. is that if I or any of us had came down a little, maybe a couple rounds earlier,
yeah,
then that would have changed things. But who knows, right? Then you lose your stake in those higher valued spots and terrains.
Yeah, I did. I think I also really enjoyed it. It's an interesting balance of tactical decisions. And I will say, I think I made a lot of tactical decisions. I scored quite well in the game itself, but my end game scoring was like nothing. Because you get to go score every single tile you're on. Every single tile in the game is going to score again at the end. I was only on like 4 tiles maybe. I put so few species out on the map. I don't know how I scored points, but I was scoring a bunch of points. I think I just kept scoring those land tiles over and over again. Whereas you also, I think where I completely fell down is you gotta take advantage of those tactical in-game scorings when you can, but you also very much need to be planning for the end of the game.
Yeah, and I'm not sure. I think after we played a couple more games, this will be a little easier. But we all start with a special ability that we get to. I think we have 2 cards that we get to choose from.
Mm-hmm.
And the card that I chose made it resilient against the depletion of certain food types or food chains. But I never really needed it. Throughout the whole entire game, it just never impacted me. So my special ability never really came in handy at all.
And mine let me bump people's action markers, even just with my normal ones.
Oh, okay.
Which seemed like a really good thing. I was like, oh, this feels like it's going to be good.
An extra action
technique. But they get their action. Yeah, they then get an extra action. And I think I only used it once or twice.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
So it'd be interesting to dig into it more. Okay, on that note, scale of 1 to 5, how excited are you to play this again?
I think it's firmly in a 3.5 to 4.
Yeah. I think if I had to pick between whether I wanted to play Iki or Dominant Species Marine, when I had initially finished playing both of them, I would have said Iki.
Oh, really?
But as I've been thinking about Dominant Species Marine, I think I kind of want to go back to that one.
Yeah, just based on how you described Iki, I feel like I'd prefer Dominant Species too.
Yeah, it's much more bitey. We don't have as many of those area control games. We don't play them as often.
No, but I also feel like this game wouldn't play quite as well without four players.
Yeah, I think it does say that it plays best at four, and we were playing at four.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I would be interested to try it at two just to see how it feels.
Hmm.
But okay. Yeah, okay. So that was Dominant Species Marine.
And then our last one, last lineup. Quite the name.
I know. This is The Great Split.
What do you do
by, in The Great Split? Well, let me tell you who designed it and published it. Okay. Then I will tell you you do.
All right.
You split things.
Oh.
Yeah. So, The Great Split was designed by, oh gosh, Hjalmar Haack, who designed Railroad Inc.
Ah!
And Lorenzo Silva.
That name, so...
Yeah, so Horrible Guild published it. So they, I believe it was these two that designed Railroad Inc. and a bunch of other games we quite enjoy.
Oh, okay. Well, then maybe I need to play The Great Split too, where you split things.
Yeah, so The Great Split, thematically, it's set, I think, in the 20s. Very Art Deco. I really like the artwork. Mm. Very cool. And you are rich people trying to get richer? So you're going to be, throughout the game, you're going to be investing in different areas. Like, you might be investing in art or books. You want a really big library. Maybe gems, jewels, blue jewels, and green jewels. So there's all these different areas you're investing in, and how you're basically collecting and increasing your value in these is by your, I'm going to say drafting cards. Stick with me. So you're going to be dealt, you're going to have a certain number of cards in your hand to start. And you have to, it basically, the entire game revolves around the I split, you choose mechanism. So you're going to look at those cards and you're going to look at your neighbor to the left. And you're going to figure out, okay, which cards do I want from this? And what cards might they want? And you want to split it in such a way that you can, you basically want to encourage your neighbor because you're going to split those cards, whatever one you want. You can have one card and four cards or, you know, try and split it evenly. You're going to put a little divider in there. You're going to put them in this little envelope, fold them up, and pass them. Everyone passes to the left. So your neighbor's going to open those cards. They're going to pick which bundle of cards they want to keep.
Mm.
And you're, of course, getting cards from your neighbor from your right and looking and figuring out which bundle you want to keep. Then you pass that envelope back. And after you've picked your cards, you pass it back. And then you get whatever they didn't pick as well. So... it's a really interesting incentive because you're trying to figure out, it's not that hard to know what cards you want, depending on what strategy you're going for. But you have to then figure out, you know, in a drafting game like Seven Wonders, you look at a hand of cards, you know what card you want, you take it, you put it down, that's your card.
Yeah.
Here, you look at a hand of cards, you know what card you want, and now you have to figure out how to split these cards in such a way that... the person you're passing them to isn't going to take what you want.
Oh, because they get to choose.
I split, you choose.
Oh, kind of like Tosimasi.
A little bit.
But you're not splitting cards. But
it's like, and you know all the cards.
Interesting.
So everyone's going to yell at me, but I think it is card drafting in a weird, twisty way.
Okay.
But basically, so all these things score in different ways. So I think there's three or four different scorings throughout the game. And when that triggers, like for the library, for example, every time basically you get a card, it's going to have certain icons on it, like say a little book. Whenever you see that icon, you get to move your little bookmarker up a spot. It's all just tracks. Everyone has their own little player board with all these tracks on it. Double layer player boards. Very nice. And the library, if you get on a regular scoring, when you get far enough over, basically it's like, okay, if you're past here, you're getting 3 points. Oh, you went past here. Now you're getting 10 points, etc. There are gems, blue and green. And for those ones, you're going to get the value of the lowest one. So you've got to move those up together. Because no one just wants a collection of green gems. Like, that's pointless if you don't have some blue to offset it.
Of course. We all know.
Exactly. There's a money track. There's also an art track, which is really interesting. So the value of art and how much that the value of the art increases each round is dependent, like on a random, you flip over a little tile and tells you whether it's going up 1, 2, or 3 spaces.
Oh, so it's totally randomized?
It's always going up, but it's a sliding scale. So depending where that sliding scale ends, that's going to tell you, okay, if I have this much art, I'm going to get this many points. If I have below that within a range, I'm going to get fewer points. So and if I'm out of this sliding scale altogether to the left, basically lower, then I'm not getting any points.
So what's the story behind this game? What are you playing as?
I think you're rich someone just collecting rich a bunch people? Of stuff. Yeah.
Collecting gems.
Yeah, and yeah, yeah. Paintings? Partying it up.
Oh, okay.
I think.
And I do love the artwork.
Yes, the artwork is beautiful. The production is lovely.
Very a la Potion Explosion in terms of...
No, we'll see
how they drew some of the characters, yeah. Except in all of its 1920s glory. Mm-hmm.
It's a beautiful game, and I really enjoyed it. And I don't think, like, the strategy isn't necessarily that hard. I don't think it matters whether you go heavy on books or heavy on art. Like, you go heavy on a couple different things, and I expect they're fairly well balanced. It doesn't matter what you go heavy on. You're going to have equal chance of winning. It really comes down to how well can you convince your opponent to take what you want them to take and leave what you want? Or how well can you balance these things so it doesn't matter?
Now, okay, so I have, let's say, certain preconceived notions about game's complexity, mm-hmm. and the general sort of attitude that you need to have when you're playing the game, mm-hmm. or the enjoyableness that you would experience when you're playing the game.
Okay.
So for me, usually my enjoyment level straddles between like a mid-2 to a mid-3, and if I'm feeling like, yeah, my brain's doing well today, maybe in the mid to low 4s. So this game, just without seeing the actual rating, what number would you rate it?
Well, this is challenging because I know roughly where I looked at it. Okay. When I looked up the
So I looked at it, and it's rated as a 1.93 out of 5. Weight scale, which for me usually means that, oh, this is like a total filler game. But the way that you're describing it makes me feel as though it doesn't play as much of a filler game as the scoring suggests.
So I think the joy of this game, and now this game plays up to 7 people, I believe.
Okay.
And it's not going to take any longer because you're literally just passing cards to your neighbor. So you really only care about the people on either side of you. Like that's your interaction. But the joy of this game is not in the deep strategy and the planning and the, you know, coming up with the perfect move.
Mm.
It is in that meta with your two neighbors.
Oh. Okay.
And the interesting thing, so I assumed like you'd get dealt a hand of cards.
Mm-hmm.
You look at them, you split them, you get your cards back, you discard all of those, you take your actions, you discard them, you get new cards. No. Whichever cards come back to you, you score them. That's your hand for the next round as well. Oh. And maybe you're getting a card added to it, or maybe you're getting some, you know, actually you're very rarely getting a card added to it. Maybe you have to discard a couple if you got extra cards.
Mm.
So you're kind of seeing the same cards over and over again, or you're curating to cards that you want.
Is it even close to the party game realm?
No, I think it's too much explanation-wise for it to be a party game.
Okay.
There's a few too many rules, a few too many, like, everything scores a little bit differently. We had a couple of people that struggled to pick up, like, why are they doing what they're doing, et cetera. But it was really interesting. Like, every time I'd pass my cards and I'd get them back and I'd pass them to the person I write. And every time he's like, why did you take that? I did not think you were going to take that. I'm like, well, clearly... I am now just trying to mess with your head and I'm going to take what you're not expecting me to. And so it's really about that, you know, kind of that camaraderie almost with your neighbors.
Okay. So then I guess I'll ask you the same question on the scale of 1 to 5. How excited are you to play this game again?
This one is a solid 4.
Wow.
Maybe a 3.5.
Really? I was not expecting that.
Right? I don't know that this will hold up to multiple plays.
Okay.
But I also think that every time you play this game, all you need to do is play with different people to your left and your right, to maybe play a slightly different game.
Okay.
But the mechanisms on the face of it are boring. You are literally, you take cards back, you look at, oh, I've got two coin icons. Okay, I'm going to go up twice on the coin jar. Oh, that unlocked a bonus. Oh, I get to move up.
Now, oh, there's a bit of a combo component to it.
A little bit. That's nice. Now, there are two scoring methods. So you have your main tracks. Then you also have kind of multiplier tracks at the bottom, which at the end of the game kind of give you multipliers. So you want to, there's basically two tracks for each resource type. And you're trying to balance them. And yeah, there's some combo things going on. But you are literally picking up cubes and moving them over on a track.
Huh.
After you've drafted and swapped your cards out.
All right.
But it was just, I just really enjoyed the atmosphere. Everyone's chatting and you're talking with your neighbor. And why did you do that? And oh, there's a scoring. Okay, let's see how we did. Like it just, I don't know. It was very fun. And joyous. And like a game that can play seven people that's going to play about the same speed regardless of how many people you're playing it with.
Yeah, now I'm having some serious FOMO of not playing this game now.
Well, that is fine because we will get a chance. I'm sure we will get another chance.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, that is a great split.
And those are our three games.
Mm-hmm. Our three standout games. Now, we did not forget. We have some games to replace in our collections with new ones from this year. So that will be next week's episode.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I'm throwing like little teasers out there.
Oh, look at you go.
Right?
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. That's nice. That's a good twist.
Thank you. And in the meantime, you can find us on socials.
Yeah. Instagram. We have a BGG guild. But really, just, you know, head on over to our show notes, and that's where you get all of the links and thingamabobs that'll get you to where you want to go.
Yes. And I guess, stay Gantsy.
Happy gaming!